If you like Area 45, you're going to enjoy the Hoover Institution's other podcasts, Uncommon Knowledge, The Classicist with Victor Davis Hanson, and The Libertarian with Richard Epstein. Subscribe now to the Hoover Podcast at hoover.org/podcasts. That's hoover.org/podcasts. Hoover Podcast, ideas defining a free society.
Hello, it's Monday, March the 30th, day 11 of California on lockdown, and a majority of Americans now told to stay at home. Welcome to Area 45, a Hoover Institution podcast examining the policy avenues available to the 45th President of the United States. I'm Bill Whalen, a Hoover Institution Research Fellow, as well as a Virginia Hobbs Carpenter Fellow in Journalism. My two guests today, neither of whom I can see in person as we're doing this from our respective remote locations, either on or not too far from the Stanford University campus, they are David Brady and Doug Rivers. Dave Brady is the Bowen H. and Janice Arthur McCoy Professor of Political Science in the Stanford Graduate School of Business, and he's a Hoover Senior Fellow Emeritus. Dr. Brady is the author of multiple books and papers on politics. He and his colleague Brett Parker write very insightful data-driven analyses for Real Clear Politics, one of which we're going to discuss today. Dave, are you with us?
I am.
We're also joined by Doug Rivers, a Hoover Institution Senior Fellow and a Stanford University Political Scientist. He's also the chief scientist at YouGov PLC, a global polling firm, and we're going to talk about some of his polling data. Doug, are you with us?
Hi, Bill.
So let's begin the conversation with what has happened since the last time we convened, which was a little over a month ago, and gee, not much happened. All that occurred was, number one, a Democratic race that seemed wide open suddenly broke Joe Biden's way. Second, Jomentum, as they called it, quickly killed the thought of an open convention. And Doug Rivers, to your considerable credit, you never bought in the idea of brokered convention. I admit I drank from that Kool-Aid, but you didn't. So kudos to you, Doug. Point three, the Biden coronation that quickly came to a halt thanks to the COVID-19 pandemic. Point four, the American economy, President Trump's ticket to re-election cratered. Point five, the nominee in waiting, Joe Biden, is now sequestered in a basement in Delaware. His party's convention is very much uncertain. Point six, a growing number of primaries have been postponed. New York, for example, is supposed to vote on April the 28th. They now postponed to June 23rd. Those have to be made up. Then finally, Donald Trump, always a vulnerable incumbent, seems even more so, though I've seen polls that show an uptick in his numbers, others that show him in deep trouble in swing districts. That is a lot to digest in a very short period of time, but let's start with a general question. The two of you, have you ever seen anything like this? And Dave Brady, you and I have talked about this off podcast. You mentioned that maybe there's a parallel between the elections of 1918 and 1920 and what's going on now. Can you explain that?
Well, in 1918, you had the so-called pandemic of the Spanish flu, which killed many more people than this. And so I looked up. But if you actually were reading a political history of that period, of not many, you wouldn't really notice that the flu didn't seem to have much effect on the election. So I did look up 1916 and 1920 presidential elections. It's a bit hard to tell what happened to turnout, which the main thing you'd worry about, as they have in some primaries, such as Ohio, was the people wouldn't come out to vote because they were afraid of getting the COVID-19. But in 1916 and 1920, the best we can tell, turnout went down between 1960 and 1920. The reason, of course, was that was the first election where women were voting, and therefore turnout was down because they didn't turn out as high in numbers as men did. But fortunately, there are a number of states like Wyoming, which had allowed women to vote over the long haul. And actually, having looked at six of those states, it turns out that turnout wasn't much different between 1916 and 1920. So that's the one period that I can say was probably closest to it. Had effect on the economy, not as badly as this one is, but in terms of the politics, turnout was probably down a bit between 1916 and 1920, but no dramatic effect. And the only other one I can think of is the difference between 1860 and 1864. And no, Professor Rivers, I was not alive in 1860 and 1864. But in that one, the turnout between 1860 and 1864 was down. So I guess the main thing I could conclude from the data I was able to look at was that turnout's likely to drop, but that seems to be the major effect on the politics of the past.
So, Rivers, what say you? Is this just uncharted waters we're in right now?
Well, I don't remember. I
1818 or 1860. I've read about them. No one has a clue of what it's going to mean. It is interesting that a bunch of polls came out that showed Trump getting a bump in overall popularity and also a increase in the last week or so in his ratings for handling coronavirus.
Right. Do you think that's maybe not a coincidence that he is doing press conferences every day and paying attention to government and not tweeting that much?
I don't know. Have you watched the press conferences, Bill? I can't imagine those are things his campaign advisor are good staff.
I think they like the press conferences for about the first. No, I think they like about the first 20 minutes of the press conference until it gets into the rambling conversations and the inevitable, you know, fights with the reporters and all that. But Doug, take us through some polling data, if you could. You mentioned Trump. What about Joe Biden, the nominee in waiting? What's happened to his numbers?
Well, in across the board, polls that have trial heats of Biden versus Trump show Biden up typically by 5 to 8. So that's been holding steady. So it's quite interesting that you see higher Trump popularity, but it doesn't translate into doing better against Biden, as best I can tell, is in an undisclosed location, because you hardly hear anything about him.
Okay. What about what's a famous Jerry Brown line? Less is more. Is less Joe Biden more for his poll numbers?
I think at the moment, there's not much to be gained by Biden saying anything. That criticism, you know, it's better off having the criticism being made by surrogates or other Democrats than making it himself. We've been running polls through Yahoo News where we ask about coronavirus and in particular handling of coronavirus. And I'll get a increase in the most recent wave that was March 5th and 26th, mm-hmm. 2 weeks earlier. In his handling of coronavirus, if you look at specific things, the rate really terrible. You know, is he unifying the country? Is he organizing the government? Is he doing everything that he possibly could? And those, you know, the numbers on that are not good for Trump at all. Now he gets excellent ratings, you know, typically by 16 to 23% of the people. Those are, you know, you'd hope a president in the midst of a national crisis would have a rally around the flag effect, where, you know, if you look at governors like Andy Cuomo or Gretchen Whitmer and even Gavin Newsom, their popularity ratings have gone through the ceiling.
Right,
and that's not happening to Trump.
So this ties into a column that your colleague, Dr. Brady, co-authored last week, Real Clear Politics, which looked at the premise of a president's numbers going up at the time of a national crisis. And Dave Brady crunched some numbers, and he found just the opposite, that amidst this terrible, terrible health crisis we're going through, polarization is alive and well. Dave, would you like to explain what's going on here?
Well, we looked at it, and I should point out that this is another one of Doug's polls. This is the YouGov Economist poll, which is done weekly. And on that poll, when we looked at March 17th, we broke the poll down by very conservative, and more moderate Republicans. That's roughly about 37%. Or 38% of Republicans say they're very conservative, 37% say they're conservative, and 22% say that they are moderate. So when we did that first poll, we found huge differences. Approval of Trump, strong approval of Trump's handling of the crisis. The Democrats were strong disapproval. Republicans, strong approval. But among Republicans, the more moderate, which is 22%, only 34% of them And only 59% of conservatives gave Trump very strong remarks. And then when we ask a question, there was a question about, has the U.S. handled the crisis better than other countries? And again, on that, the more moderate Republicans were at 45% thinking the U.S. had done better. Now, I will say that we just ran another one for the week, the poll that ended March 24th. And one of the reasons, as Doug pointed out earlier, that the Trump has bumped up is Trump went from 34% of more moderate Republicans who said they had strong approval. He jumped to 55%, and he has moved up among more moderate Republicans and slightly among more conservative Republicans. The very conservative Republicans were with him all the way, but in the past week, he's gotten more credit for doing a good job than he had before. By the way, the second thing we looked at was the kind of whether they were following rules like not going out as much. And we found big differences between very conservative, conservative, and moderate. Moderate Republicans were staying home more. They weren't going out. They were traveling less. And in the process of 1 week, when the president started to treat the matter more seriously, and Fox News also changed its coverage of the coronavirus. What happened was Trump, the behavior has changed. Across the board, Republicans are staying home more, going out to eat less. Travel plans have changed. But again, the more moderate ones are less, have changed their behavior more. By the way, and of course, among Democrats, they've they're much more likely to have changed their behavior, not go out, etc. So there are continued to be differences on the polarized, as you might expect, between Democrats and Republicans. But within the parties, there are also differences. The more moderate Democrats are more likely to approve of the president, and so on and so forth.
Doug, I want you to join in on this. This strikes me as a bit of a nature and nurture issue. Do we have a different electorate than we did in 2000 and 2001? Do we have an electorate that's a little more polarized by nature? Or is it a function of nurture? And that, unlike in 2001, we have a much more polarized media in terms of where people get their information. And you got the guy in the White House who was very different from George W. Bush. So when you two look at these numbers, do you think this is a function of just the age we're in? In terms of people's attitudes, or is this what people also process in terms of information?
I think there is quite a bit more polarization, both media and in terms of people's partisan responses to events than there was in 2001 or even after Katrina. The ironic thing is, that's happening at the moment is that Trump's ratings are actually improving a bit among Democrats. And I think that's just a pure rally around the flag effect that will go away. It's not a big number. It's about, leads to about a 3% increase in Trump's popularity. But that's coming from Democrats that were more negative on him in January to where they are today.
So, Doug, I got the same thing. I got I got among very liberal Democrats over the week of 17 to 24. They became more anti-Trump, but among more moderate Democrats, the strong disapproval of Trump went down and approval of Trump went up by about 4 or 5 points. So I got the same thing. Of course, it's your data, so should be the same thing. That's good.
Yeah, I was actually quoting their some Pew data where they had done a recontact study of the same people, because it's always tricky when you're looking at change and you've got independent surveys and samples. Have people changed or has the sample changed? And I think it's a little bit of both.
Interesting. I don't know if you fellows saw the story the other day, the ABC News Washington Post poll, which did a deep dive into Biden's relationship with Democratic voters. And it came away with this number on Bernie Sanders supporters. It said that about 15% of them would vote for Trump in the general election if they were voting today. And it was a big screaming headline. But then I went and I looked at the 2016 numbers, and exit polls showed that about 12% of Sanders supporters flipped Trump when push came to shove. Where is Bernie Sanders in all of this? Is this just sort of further relegate him to the back of the whole thing?
Well, there's no campaign going on at the moment. So,
well, he seems to think there's still a campaign going on.
Yeah, he does, but he's getting oxygen for it. So I think he's going to continue for a while, be a nuisance to Biden.
Right.
But I don't think it leads to much of anything. I don't actually think it's hurting Biden a whole lot at the moment, because Biden's not actively campaigning either.
No, I think that's a very good point. But, you know, what can Joe Biden do right now? If you watched him last week, he did a teleprompter speech. He did a couple days of TV satellite tours. He did a CNN town hall meeting. And there's just this question with each event. It's just, you know, what kind of news do you want to make? And also, what sort of tone do you want to send? If you watched his speech on Monday, he was he praised seven governors, I think, three of whom the governors of Maryland, Massachusetts, and Ohio, who he singled out, are Republicans. 2 days later, he tore into Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, a Republican, and also a fellow who sits atop of 29 electoral votes that Joe Biden would like very much. So he is every day faced with this question of what tone. Do I be sweet? Do I be sour? And then also the question of how he approaches Donald Trump. Can he give Donald Trump any credit?
I think Trump will handle himself. I think this is a case where the Biden campaign has the right strategy, which is you can be mildly reassuring and presidential and act like you know how to be president, but that gets boring really fast. If you want ratings, you have to do what Trump does. And I think that would probably end up hurting Biden.
I don't disagree with that, but I just pulled up. So I looked at this latest YouGov poll, and if you look at someone who's a Sanders, and so there's what I have on the top is you prefer Bernie Sanders to Biden for the Democratic presidential nomination. And then you ask in the trial heat, Biden versus Trump, 80% say they'll vote for Biden, 4 or 5% say Trump, 5% say other. 7 say not sure, and 4 say they won't vote. So that's 20% who at this late stage are not committed. So I think that the Sanders, which comes from the very liberal wing of the Democratic Party, I think Biden has a delicate job here because the Sanders voters are very liberal. On the other hand, if Biden moves too far to the middle, or to the left, rather, I'm sorry, then what will happen is that he's likely to get some pressure from the moderate to conservatives in the Democratic Party. So I think Biden's not in he's in a spot where he's got to watch both ends of the spectrum. And until Bernie steps down, I think that's the situation he's in.
But at some point, Sanders is going to concede, and there will be a Democratic unity fest, whether it's anyone is there or it's just ties, I don't know. But you know, to me, the much bigger thing is Trump's handling coronavirus. Here's what I'd say are the bad news for Trump and the polling numbers on coronavirus. The first is that his line of the cure is worse than the problem. It's almost universally rejected by 75 to 20, roughly. So that was a non-starter. The second thing is he started this saying there are going to be no deaths. We're at 15 cases and they're going zero. And that thing that his supporters believed. We asked, people, how many deaths do you expect? And the modal number was across the whole population was more than 100, but less than 1,000. Among Republicans, it was less than 100. As of yesterday, Trump was essentially saying, if it's less than 200,000, we will have done a good job. Well, people are not prepared yet 200,000 deaths. There's only, at this point, the number of people expecting more than 1,000 deaths was on the order of about 5% of the public. So bringing the public around that being a success is not going to be an easy thing. In the end, the votes that Biden really needs are the suburbs in the swing states. The Sanders voters on the coast, they'll probably come along, but in the end, it doesn't matter that much. If you can assemble the same coalition and 2020 for the Democrats that they had in 2018.
Right.
Well, I'm inclined to agree because the 2016, and you look at Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Michigan and the states that the Democrats really need, it's not 2016 all over again because Donald Trump was an unknown quality then, and now he is a known quality. We've had him for 4 years, so I think voters will have a different mind. But I'm not quite as willing as Doug to totally discount the Sanders factor for just a couple reasons other than just the numbers I gave you about the vote. Depending upon how Sanders reacts and how far he tries to push the platform left, which depends upon how many members he gets on the platform committee at the convention, those are the sorts of things that could still affect the election.
You're watching that platform committee.
Well, the platform becomes very important, just as Joe Biden's vice presidential pick becomes important. But getting back to Trump now, you know, Trump is now, his world has been turned upside down. His campaign was geared to just, you know, write out the rest of the election and talk about one thing every day, the economy, the stock market. Is your IRA better off than it was 4 years ago? That's gone right now. Now, maybe some of it comes back, but that Teflon has worn off the man. So, you know, what's your sense, fellas? Does he get back to trying to talk about economics back come October or November? Or is he going to have to shift into a conversation about management under crisis?
Go ahead, Doug.
The polls show just an incredible number. Close to 20 of the people say that they or someone in their family has been laid off. So if we see 20% unemployment, it's going to be tough to make an argument about great management of the economy. Now, there's a good scenario for Trump here, which is the so-called V-shaped recovery, where he says, look, coronavirus wasn't my fault. Most people will say that's the case. So there's a quick recovery, and it's happening in the third quarter or even in the early fourth quarter. There's a story you can tell that's a good one, but I think more and more it's looking like it's going to take a lot longer. It's not going to be a V-shaped recovery.
Right. But now we're getting into also a nuanced question, because Nancy Pelosi today said basically the president has blood on his hands for botching this before he acted. Right. So now is the question of how hard do you push Trump on this?
Well, my view is the harder you push him, at this point, I just don't see how that does you a great deal. I don't see how that does you a great deal of good. Most Americans are worried about how we're going to get through this, and I think they don't want to see politics. And so why, in my view, is the Democrats did what Biden was doing, stand back. Now, Doug may well be right on that it's the Democratic surrogates that are speaking for him. But the bottom line is it's not clear to me that making it polarized along those lines is serving Democratic Party interests.
Well, maybe she's trying to do things, two things, Dave and Doug. Number one, she is at all times keeping the base active and keeping them happy, and the base wants to hear this. They cannot give Trump any credit if you're a dyed-in-the-wool Democratic progressive. You got to constantly bash and attack him. But point number two, maybe she's also trying to lead him into another round of spinning out of Congress, because she also did talk today about doing infrastructure. And a lot of infrastructure.
Is it infrastructure week again?
I think it's about to be 6 months of infrastructure, but that's the next thing. And it's very clever what she did. She didn't just talk about infrastructure and, you know, use the bad phrase of shovel-ready jobs, which we learned a decade ago is not the case. She talked about infrastructure in terms of healthcare, in terms of hospitals, in terms of first responders, making it really hard for a Republican to push back against that.
Yeah. So the stimulus bill was extremely popular. It ended up being almost unanimously supported by both Democrats and Republicans. And the polling on it, unlike the stimulus bill in 2009, which was not terribly popular. My guess is that Democrats don't want to go overboard in criticizing Trump, but that some mild criticism of we were unprepared for this and the president needs to do more for Michigan. That's not bad politics for Democrats at this stage.
I would add one thing also, that by her doing this, Dave and Doug, that it also, she plays the bad cop, so it allows Joe Biden to be the good cop. In other words, this is an attack he doesn't make to have. She does it for him.
No, that's very reasonable.
Yeah. And cherry on the sundae, he also overreacted wildly, called her some Trumpism, nasty, I forget what exactly, but just typical Trump fashion, he just went berserk on her. So maybe there's a little method to the madness here.
When you poke at me sometimes.
Go ahead, Doug, sorry.
Yeah, I think she's pretty effective at poking Trump, and she doesn't have to worry about what Republicans think of her. Has she gone too far?
Yeah, I agree with that point. If you really look at the stuff, Democrats approve of her wholeheartedly. Republicans do not approve of her wholeheartedly. And independents, pure independents, about 15% of the electorate, they, on the whole, don't like her. They're closer to Republicans. But Doug's right. She doesn't have to appeal to them. She's going to be reelected from her district. And so, Bill, what you say may well be right. She's out front taking the heat, and Biden doesn't have to do it, and maybe it keeps the base happy.
Right. So question for the two of you. Here we are almost the beginning of April, and the Democratic convention is not until the middle of July. There's still a lot of primaries to play out, but hard to imagine what Joe Biden could do. I think mathematically it's almost impossible for him not to get the nomination at this point. And even if it went to an open convention, actually that's a question for you fellas. You probably heard the Cuomo rumors too, the Cuomo buzz. Do you buy anything? I think Dino or Doug Rivers will be on this. Is there any kind of scenario in which they could go to Milwaukee and somehow elevate Andrew Cuomo into the job?
No.
It would require Joe Biden to get the coronavirus and to be on oxygen.
No, I remember, I remember in 2016 when there was a question floating around that said, if Donald Trump's down, we should put Paul Ryan up, blah, blah, blah. That was floating before. And so, Doug, we put a question in there that asked Republicans if at this point, if Donald Trump was down by 30 points in the polls and they put in and we put Paul Ryan down, and it was overwhelmingly no, that would be a disaster because the view was, of course, Trump had run in the election and run in the primaries and won. And I think the same thing will be true of Biden. They're not going to give it to somebody who didn't run.
I also think California's governor not particularly like that scenario either. He might say, well, what about me? Why Mr. Cuomo? Why not me?
Exactly.
But it would be good theater, wouldn't it? So the question is this, is there really presidential politics? It could take a timeout. I wrote a piece today suggesting that Joe Biden take a month off from politics, that instead of doing anything really that kind of smacked a partisanship, that he just go around the country to the extent he can go around the country and do good deeds. He can go to Los Angeles and hand out food at a food bank. He can help with curbside service at a Walmart near Scranton, PA. He could do something he kind of suggested in the town hall, which is get on a Zoom conference call with a bunch of families of coronavirus victims and share their pain with them. In other words, kind of look like a very large individual rather than looking maybe smallish when you get political at this time.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely, Bill.
Yeah.
There's one downside to that, right? The downside is when he makes that scheduled thing, the reporters come and they ask him, why aren't you speaking out on the issue? Why aren't you, as the presumptive nominee of your party, actually putting something forward? And I've read some criticism of him on that ground. And I think the problem, he can't do that until Bernie Sanders decides what he's going to do, which probably will stay in the race. That presents a problem for him.
You know, the Bernie situation is fascinating in this regard. Most rivals you could just push out of the race by now. Either Barack Obama or Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer would go to them and say, look, get out now if you want any future in this party. You could go to your rival and say, I will pay off your debt. I'd say, do you want to be the transportation secretary? I could give you a job and ambassadorship. And you just check all these things off. And none of these apply to Bernie Sanders. First of all, he's not a Democrat. He just invades the Democratic bloodstream every 4 years and runs. So he's more than happy to go back to his perch in the Senate and be a misanthrope. Great. So you can't pressure him on that. He is able to still raise money. He, I don't know if you saw, but he actually he got his people to raise $2 million for coronavirus relief. So they're out there and they listen to him. So he's not going broke as far as we know. And then, you know, he just wants to see this to the end. So all these conventional ways in which you could shove him out, he won't go. And it puts Biden in a bind because how do I make him go away? I try to make him happy and come up with some of ideas. Well, number one, I don't know if you can make Bernie's people happy, as you just mentioned in your stats. They are who they are. But secondly, him embracing Bernie Sanders' positions in the Midwest is like going to an all-you-can-eat buffet in Wuhan, China right now. Probably not a good idea. So there he is.
The last thing Biden needs here is to move left. Right. And I think this break for the campaign keeps him from having to do that. If he were, you know, debating Bernie every week and Bernie was running close in some of these states and continuing to turn out his voters, he would have little choice but to make concessions to Sanders. But you know, he has a chance at this point that they're going to have some mail-in ballot primaries, a convention with nobody in the hall. I can't think of anything better made to keep him from having to move left.
You know, one problem they have with their convention, Dave and Doug, is it might run up against basketball. The NBA season may resume. If it does, it's going to start up probably in June. The playoffs could go deep into July, maybe August. The Milwaukee Bucks are the best team in the NBA East. They could be playing basketball in July, and it's their arena the Democrats are meeting in. I got to believe the Bucks have first dibs on the arena. So, you know, they may be doing a virtual convention.
I think the chances of having a convention with, 20,000 people in the hall is pretty low at this point.
It is, but, you know, I was curious about, but that's a moment Joe Biden will want, because why? You always give the speech of your life at that convention. Right. I talked to George McGovern years and years ago about this. He famously got his nomination about 3 o'clock in the morning in Miami and went out and gave a speech, and he said something very funny. He goes, I gave the speech of my life. And then he paused. He said, nobody heard it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Biden is not a wonderful speaker either in front of a big crowd or, behind a desk.
But I guarantee he would kill it because he would have had a month to prepare for it. He would get caught up in the moment of it. It would be well-crafted, just very tight. It's a big moment. And as you know, you get a bump out of this. Now, we could have another conversation about bumps and how illusory they are. But it's a moment that he might be deprived of because of this virus.
True.
So there we are. So,
you know, the thing you have to remember on Biden is that he could run a pretty safe campaign. He does not have to increase the number of votes that he's getting from where he is today. He just needs to keep from, having some big mistakes, which, the last few years of the Biden campaign suggests that he's fully capable of making those.
Right. And he also may have kind of come back to circle to how his campaign began, which was the idea of the nation need a healer and somebody kind of calm and cool and collect under fire. And he was under all sorts of pressure saying, well, you can't do that. If you're up against a strong economy, you got to do more. Well, if the economy has gone away and maybe you don't get the V come the fall, maybe that does play right into his hands that there he is.
I think his chances are pretty good at the moment.
Of winning the whole thing.
Yeah, it's a long time between now and November. And as we've seen, a lot of things can happen in between. So probably not a...
Okay. Well, gentlemen, let's wrap up from our various remote locations. Let me ask you one final question. Very simple questions. Political scientists and students of politics, what should the public be looking at right now that they're not?
Why would you want to close on a question like that? That's a great question. I'm going to think about that for the next two or three days, and I'll get back to you.
Let's let Doug really go first. Doug, let's put it through a polling lens, if you will. So we've got polls coming at you left, right, and sideways in this country. If somebody wants to look at polls in the next few weeks, what should they be looking at? Should they be looking at Trump's approval rating? Should they be looking at, confidence and, voters have in the future of the country? What metric would you drive them to?
Yeah, I think the one that probably matters is how optimistic or depressed people are about the future. So if you believe things are coming back, there's a very different scenario than if people think that it's going to be a Great Depression and a million people are going to die. At the moment, my prediction is that we haven't seen the worst of this, and the whole way the economy is going to play will be different as this crisis deepens. Right now, there are a lot of people who would like to get back to normal, and if they would take off the restrictions on sheltering in place and so forth, they'd happily go outside. But if you have a few hundred thousand deaths, which is certainly well within the current predictions, I think you're going to find a lot of people say, I don't want to go outside, and that's going to completely reverse the way this plays out.
I can't answer in part your question. The things that I've been trying to look at are serious articles about what is the nature of the trade-off between what happens to the economy and what happens to the number of the effects of COVID-19. And that's a serious question. The president brought it up and some got poo-pooed and when you should do it. But it's a serious question because it is possible to let it extend so long that the facts, it extends so long that the facts are it hurts the economy too deeply. So I don't have an answer on that, but I'm trying to read what I take to be serious attempts to answer that, such as treatment of these things heterogeneously rather than homogeneously and so on. And I have read a couple of good pieces, but that's what I would be looking for.
And Dave, can you foresee anything that can blunt polarization, or is polarization just like they used to say about rock and roll in the 1950s, is polarization here to stay?
I do not, because I think one thing will happen. There'll be a bit of a consensus among both Democrats and Republicans on agreement that the economy is not doing well. We've seen a 43% drop, difference between Democrats and Republicans on how's the economy doing. That'll drop, but given the nature of what caused the crisis, I don't think that you'll find Democrats and Republicans Democrats will blame Trump. Republicans won't blame Trump. And I think it's like Doug says, it's going to be an election. It's going to be determined over time how much what happens to the pandemic and then what happens to people in terms of the economy. And it's a long time between now and November.
Okay. Dave Brady, Doug Rivers, you guys stay safe, stay healthy out there, okay?
Same to you, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
You've been listening to Area 45, a Hoover Institution podcast on the policy avenues available to the 45th President of the United States. And in this podcast, the effect this COVID-19 pandemic has had on the presidential race. If you've been enjoying Area 45, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to us. There are all kinds of ways to do it. You can do it at Hoover's webpage. You can do it on iTunes, a whole host of other services. No excuse for not signing up. You can find the Hoover Institution online at www.hoover.org. While you're there, do yourself a favor and sign up for the Daily Report, which delivers the best work of Hoover's fellows, including Dave Brady and Doug Rivers, straight to your inbox weekdays. I'd also like to point you to something which the Hoover Institution has been doing during this crisis. We've been doing virtual policy briefings, and we do them on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and you can find those on the Hoover website as well. The Hoover Institution has Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter feeds. Our Twitter handle is @HooverInst. That's @HooverInst. Doug Rivers is on Twitter as well. His Twitter handle is @Doug_Rivers. And I mentioned his polling firm, YouGov. That's also on Twitter. That's @YOUGOV, @YouGov. For the Hoover Institution, this is Bill Whalen. We'll be back soon with another installment of Area 45. Till then, thanks for listening. By all means, stay safe, stay healthy, and stay strong. So long for now.
For more podcasts from the Hoover Institution, please visit hoover.org or Hoover's channels on iTunes, iTunes U, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. I'm Chris Dauer for the Hoover Institution. Thanks for listening.